Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, a trio of chats straight from the Toronto Film Festival. Nicolas Cage, Kit Harington, and Anna Kendrick. Hey guys, Josh Horowitz here with another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. And yes, this one's got something for everyone. Safe to say, three extraordinary actors, two of them new to the podcast. So, okay, I'm going to make this brief because there is a plethora of great conversation coming at you. As you may or may not know, I was recently at the Toronto Film Festival, saw a slew of exceptional movies, got a head start on the big fall to come of some of the big prestige movies, and I also snuck in a few conversations for Happy, Sad, Confused, of course. So you know the drill by now. If you want to watch these conversations, you have two options. If you want the first dibs on the conversations, go over to patreon.com/happysadconfused. Everything goes up there early. The audio, the video, the guest announcements, the discount codes for the live events. That's where you get that stuff. If you just want to watch the video version of this podcast, if these respective conversations, go to our new YouTube channel, youtube.com/Josh Horowitz. The only other preamble I'll give you, we've got a bunch of live events coming up in New York City. Elizabeth Moss, Mila Kunis, Ralph Macchio, all the information on tickets in the show notes. That's the business. Okay, conversations. You're going to hear three back-to-back conversations in this episode, as I said. So let's start in the beginning. First up, the man, the myth, the legend, Nicolas Cage. He has been on the list for quite some time, guys. So this is only about a 20-minute conversation, but we packed a lot in. We talked about his new film at Toronto. It's called Butcher's Crossing. It is kind of an anti-Western. Nicolas plays really a dynamic, interesting character. You'll hear him talk about it, kind of cut from the cloth of a Colonel Kurtz or an Ahab, a big, bold look. He goes bald for the role, and this conversation's great. We talk about comic books because, you know, he loves that stuff. We talk about Brando stories, premiere stories, lots of fun. He lived up to every hope I had for this conversation, and yes, I truly believe we're going to get him for the big one one of these days, too. A little bit later on, we're going to talk to Kit Harington, who I caught up with about his new movie that just screened at TIFF called Baby Ruby. I don't believe it has distribution yet. I really enjoyed this one. You should check it out when it comes around. Basically about a young couple dealing with a pregnancy and child, and kind of part thriller horror and part black comedy. Kit's fantastic in it. Definitely a change of pace for him. And again, a first-time guest on the podcast, though we've, of course, chatted before. Yes, we talk Game of Thrones. Yes, we talk House of the Dragon. Yes, we talk about his Marvel future. We pack a lot into that conversation as well. We round out our trio of conversations with a returning guest, someone who is a regular Unhappy, Sad, Confused that I can never pass up the opportunity to catch up with. It's, of course, Anna Kendrick. Anna is fantastic in her new film, Alice Darling. Again, a change of pace for her. More dramatic, kind of a stripped-down indie, kind of dealing with gaslighting. She plays a young woman in a bit of a toxic relationship. Exceptional work from her. And even given the subject matter, we had a light, fun chat about the film, about her upcoming directing debut, about A Simple Favor and its sequel that they are working on. And also about her escaping from an elevator in Toronto, which she had just done moments before I caught up with her. So strap in, guys. Nicolas Cage, immediately followed by Kit Harington, immediately followed by Anna Kendrick. This is the best triple feature in town. Enjoy this special episode of Happy, Sad, Confused.
great pleasure to have Mr. Nicolas Cage on my little old podcast. It's good to see you, man.
Happy to see you. Thank you for inviting me.
Congratulations on the film. I mean, like, I saw it the other day, and we're here in Toronto. It just premiered. Give me a sense, first of all, just over the years, you've been to countless premieres. What jumps out to you as, like, a memory that was surprising to you, an experience at a premiere where maybe it was better or worse or unusual than what you had expected?
Well, I didn't, the last one at South by Southwest for Massive Talent, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect these giant foamy costumes as different incarnations of so-called Nick Cage, the Nicky character, out front at the premiere. I didn't expect the kind of transference of electricity that was in the room between the audience and the cast members. That was a real fun night, and that was kind of brand new for me.
What about in terms of brand new? I mean, you grew up loving this, and you still do to this day. When I think of just actors who love acting, I think of Nick Cage. Like,
Thank you.
Do you remember the early years of, like, the first premieres you went to, and just
terrible.
Like,
oh my gosh,
real stressful was, or what?
Yeah, I was so nervous, and I was so hard on myself and so hard on the movies. In fact, here, 1987, Moonstruck premiered, and Norman was in the cinema with me, and I remember...
Canadian, wasn't it Norman
Joseph? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was my first Toronto, it was my first TIFF, and I remember... I got up and I walked out. I said it was a nightmare. I couldn't, and the movie doesn't work, and I was really stressed about it. And of course, I was entirely wrong. The movie's great, everyone was great in it. But Norman, I got a call, like, is he okay? He didn't seem too happy. And I remember I went to the premiere of Valley Girl, the first premiere, and I was sweating. Literally remember a trickle of sweat coming down my face. And Lance Henriksen was sitting in front of me. My chair at the cinema was behind him, and I was sweating, and the lights came on, and I was so stressed out. And he turned, and Lance said, do you have any idea what kind of actor you are? And I was like, I don't, I'm horrible. And he kind of relieved me. I remember that. So those were the first two premieres.
Hopefully you're less hard on yourself now.
Well, then I went to Birdie with
yes.
Alan Parker.
Let's just go through every one. I want to hear every single one.
What do you think? I said, what do you think, Nick? Any good? I just kept walking. Oh, man, I was a mess.
In your own head.
I wild at heart, I actually left buzzed.
That was Cannes, wasn't it? That was like
that
a big premiere.
That was Cannes. Yeah. I was pumped. That one I started to really... enjoy the experience, but the other ones, and I had no right to be so hard on them, on the movies, on myself, on the co-filmmakers. I had no heart.
I can only
no
imagine
right.
The environment of Cannes and Wild at Heart, that electric.
A mess. It was electric, but people were booing, people were cheering.
Well, that's Lynch. Every
and
Lynch movie.
Yeah, but I remember I was in a room with Bernardo Bertolucci, Isabella Rossellini, David Lynch, and myself, and I was kind of having a massive panic attack, you know, and I finally just got up and left. I was like, I could hear them through the door. Is he okay? What's wrong with me?
I hope you had a more chill experience on this one.
I had a. I'm past all that. You know, you got to remember, I started when I was 15. I was just a kid, you know, I was a baby at the Valley Girl premiere, and I was relatively a baby at the Moonstruck premiere, you know.
This one, I mean, shockingly, is kind of your first overt Western. I mean, you've kind of like hit every genre. It's what the mark of an amazing career that you've dabbled in everything, more than dabbled. And I love this character. This is kind of like an archetype that we've seen done very well, and you follow in the lineage. It's kind of that intelligent, obsessive, it's got that Ahab, Colonel Kurtz vibe.
Yeah.
Are you the type of actor that, like, goes back to those? I mean, you know those roles,
sure.
Either. You've seen Apocalypse, I'm sure, 1,000 times. But
one
do you go
favorites.
Back? Is it help you, or
yes.
Do you find that gets in your head?
No, I love it. I love it. I don't see how any kind of a rehearsal or any kind of research wouldn't do anything but help a yeah. performance. And, you know, the director of this particular movie would say that he's not a fan of the Western genre. I personally like Westerns, but he feels that this is more of an anti-Western and feels that the Western archetype of what is good, what is evil has done a lot of negative in terms of what it means to be a man, in terms of programming us as men. But that being said, there is a romance to the Western, but I would say my next picture, The Old Way, is more leaning in the direction of the traditional Western archetype. This is more of an anti-Western, more of a kind of a, not a message per se, but a reflection of the darker sides of the human nature that lead us to ambition, greed, and bloodlust to bring an animal to extinction. And it's still happening today. I mean, shark fin soup. But what I think helps me is reading books that inspire me. And this book, John Williams' book, Butcher's Crossing, is a great blueprint. And I had been invited to do The Seawolf with Ron Howard, and he changed his mind and did The Grinch. But I read that book, and I loved Wolf Larson because the character is a dichotomy. He's a conflicted character. He's remarkably intelligent. He's well-read. He's reading Milton's Paradise Lost. And then he's on this blood sport to kill all the seals. And I thought that Miller would be my chance to try and examine that type of a character. You know, but in this case, Miller is also, it's implicit, but he's also kind of an agent of genocide. In my mind, it was a subtext, is that he knew specifically, you kill the bison, you kill the American buffalo, you kill the life source, you kill the spiritual life source, the food life source of the people, the First Nation people. So the two things were happening at once, and it really did happen. There were 60 million buffalo, there were 300 buffalo. There were how many Insanity. Native Americans, God. And then that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's why he wanted to make this movie.
You have a great cast in this, but you did have a co-star that apparently wanted to murder you. Are you in Rain Man, your horse, okay now?
Oh, Rain Man is a superb horse. I that's all I'm going to say.
You're okay? Oh, no.
He's a superb horse.
Okay, yeah. You got through it. Because yeah, there was, no, that great. Became a thing.
He's beautiful in the movie. He's okay. A great horse.
Okay. Talk to me about like your decision on a look of the character. This is like you've had a lot of different looks over the years, and it's kind of a shock to the system to see you in this bald with the facial hair. Was that your idea? And no,
it was Gabe's idea.
How did you respond to that?
Well, the first thing he said, because you know I don't follow a lot of sports, but I of course, who doesn't know the phenomenon that is Michael Jordan? And if there is an athlete that there's maybe a handful of athletes that I really find remarkable and amazing to watch, and he's one of them. But he's also like a real killer on the court. He is going to win at all costs, and people know that. And Gabe, being from Chicago as well, you know, Bulls and all that, he said, I want you to look like Michael Jordan. I go, well, what are you talking about? I want you to shave your head. I go, well, why? He goes, well, because I think that the energy that to win at all costs, that ambition, I think is applicable to Miller. I thought it was a good idea. So I said, okay, and I did it. And then I thought about the similarities between Kurtz in Heart of Darkness and Marlon's portrayal of Brando's portrayal of Kurtz in Apocalypse Now, and I thought, okay, well, this could be a coalescence of Michael Jordan and Marlon Brando. Two names I don't think we've ever connected before together, except through the funnel that is Nicolas Cage.
Exactly. Leave it to you. Did you have a relationship with Brando? You must have.
I met him a few times, and I always liked him. He was hilarious. I mean, the one time that comes to mind was... He had given a little talk, I think, at the CAA building, and I went with Giovanni Ribisi because he was a huge Brando fan, and we went. And I afterwards, you know, Brando told all these really surreal, abstract, and marvelously absurd stories. And I said to him, you know, Marlon, you know, you've really written the inspiration for me to do this. And he said, oh, Jesus Christ, Nick, give me a fucking break.
That's the thing about him, is that like, because you're in some ways, not from the acting prowess part, but the other part, you're the opposite, in that like you revere and love this, and he lost it. He didn't care. He didn't give a shit about acting. And that just bums me out so much.
Well, he said there's, one, two, three, you know, there's a good actor doesn't know where the camera is. A great actor knows where the camera is. And Marlon Brando doesn't care where the camera is.
Sums it up. Oh no. Speaking of bald looks, you've said Egghead is the character you'd want to put. Do you have an why Egghead, and what's your interpretation? What do you want to bring to the table?
Well, you know what I mean. It's like Egghead is Vincent Price, right? He's one of our other great American superstar actors that I revere and had so much fun watching growing up, Theater of Blood. So I was watching the Batman show because I really wanted to see what Vincent Price was going to do. And the character is hilarious. I mean, everything starts with excellent and it's ecstatic and, yeah, but I'm not gonna, I'm not calling Warner Brothers. This is just more of a
fun little digress.
Thing, because I'm on a red carpet. Somebody asked me a question. I want to give them a funny answer. But yeah, there is an approach to that character that could be terrifying, and I've thought a lot about it. But I'm not going to share it with you.
Our next conversation. We need to build to that. We'll
that's
get there.
On page 47.
Okay. It's funny that, like, you have the history of being associated with Superman. I feel like you would be, like, approached at some point for a Batman. Like, Nick Cage as Batman makes sense to me in a way.
Well, it's interesting. There's two kinds of people in the world. There's Superman people and there's Batman.
So you're a Superman person.
Well, I'm kind of both. I mean,
you just said there was a you can't have it both ways, Nick.
Well, you're right. Well, I don't want to talk anymore about it because this is just going to go viral. It's just anything to do with comic book characters, it just goes and goes.
We can't let them ruin our fun. It's two geeks talking about things we love.
Superman is interesting because Superman, you think about what is that energy, and it's really the desire, the need, the absolute commitment to do that which is good, to a point where is this almost a condition? Is this a flaw? something like, what is that? Where is that coming from? Why do we need to be a hero so much? Because you don't feel accepted, because you feel alienated, because you aren't one of us and you gotta fit in. And then on the other side, you have Batman, who seems to get a lot of power from, he's the most tragic character in all of comic bookdom, isn't he? I mean, look what happened, how he came into the world and became the Batman. So his energy is coming from a place that can go either way. He can do things that are, but he never uses a gun, but he could still do things that are a bit
extreme
and malevolent.
Yeah. Kevin Smith said he wanted you as Bizarro Superman.
I never had that conversation. I don't know anything about that. Okay. It never came up. I was never a part of that conversation, so you can't rope me into that. I'm not a part of that.
You were a part of Spider-Man as Spider-Man Noir. Are we going to get to see more of you in
That would be fun. I would love to do that.
What did you already did? I mean, is there
more
in Spider-Verse?
Well, I did it, but wouldn't it be great to see a live action of that character? Because I could bring all the, my favorite actor of all time is James Cagney.
Of course.
He is something else, and he will always be that energy that I would aspire to. But yeah, I'd like to bring some of that energy and the bogey energy that Spider-Man Noir could embody.
You've never done television. You're like it's like you, Tom Cruise, Leo. Like everyone else has done TV. Is that?
Well, I did one. I did The Best of Times, which was a pilot. George Slaughter Productions. George himself discovered me. He discovered me when I was 15. I did one show, and it didn't get picked up, so it never happened. I never went to series, and I'm thankful for that because my interest is film acting. It's cinema.
So is that's a philosophy that's just important to you, especially in these times when we talk about we worry about the future of film and theater going. Yeah. That's just going to be to your dying day. Like, this is what you've devoted your craft to, your life to, and it's just what it is.
Well, they say never say never, but the reality is my interests are cinema.
Yeah.
I want to make movies. That's why I'm here and why we're talking. Movies are what I love.
No, I'm with you.
The close-up, it's James Dean, it's, being at Quentin's Cinema, the New Beverly Cinema, when I was 15, and having a nervous breakdown while Dean was having a nervous breakdown watching East of Eden. That is why I said, this is what I have to do. I got to try and get there,
You mentioned Quentin. He, a few years back, mentioned you as one of the three great actors in his estimation. He listed Sean Penn and Tim Roth as his favorites of all time. I can't believe you guys haven't worked together. Have you talked to Quentin at any point?
I would put Quentin in the box that is the friend. He's a friend.
Yeah.
I consider him someone that I love talking with. I love communicating with. He's somebody that inspires me. I think it's just magnificent that he bought the New Beverly Cinema and the Vista, and he's keeping these movies. That experience that I had to get in the movie, he bought the church, you know, that, and he's a guardian of the flame. He's a guardian of the church. And so, you know, my instinct is to keep it in the friendship zone so we can have these delightful exchanges and make lists about favorite films and talk as film enthusiasts.
I've been geeking out. He has a book coming out, as you may or may not know, and he also has like a podcast where him and Roger Avery just talk about like the movies they grew up watching.
Probably do something like that at some point for sure.
Yeah,
you know, I would love to go and talk with Quentin at some point. You know, I enjoy the communication from coming from the brotherhood of those of us that love the church of filmmaking.
Are there actors today that are taking the Nick Cage big swings? I feel like there are not enough. Like, this is what I've always admired about you, is like, as much as you talked about being afraid at premieres early on, you strike me as a fearless performer and have been from the beginning.
Thank you. And
I'm all in for the big swings.
Thank you.
Do you see that in the new generation right now?
No, not as much.
Right?
There are some that definitely have the flair and the verve. I mean, Joaquin, you know, I absolutely just adore everything he does. Yeah. And I had the pleasure of working with him on 8mm, and we had a lot of laughs, and we had so much fun together. And I just, everything he does is inspiring. I think Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, he has the guts, you know, when you look at what he did in There Will Be Blood, you know, or Gangs of New York. I mean, he's got that Cagney largesse, and he's also got the subtlety to do the Phantom Thread. He has it, you know. I say Joaquin and Daniel Day have it.
Are you a Tom Hardy fan? It's a weird one to bring up, but like Venom, which is I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of. I feel like that's like a Nick Cage swing. If he was like doing that kind of movie, that's what he would do.
Well, I haven't seen Venom, but I do think he's terrific. I like so much of what he does. I've been operating on like 5 hours sleep
because
I just had a new baby. What was the picture he did where he was in the car? It was just him.
Of course, Locke.
Locke was.
Right?
Bravo, Tom Hardy.
Have you ever done like something like that? I'd love to see you, like that contained environment.
I did just recently wrap up a picture with Joel Kinnaman called Sympathy for the Devil, where it was just the two of us predominantly going through this movie together, mostly in a car.
Yeah.
But with Locke, Hardy, it was just him, you know, and I thought that was magnificent. I thought that was arguably one of the best performances of the decade.
Do you remember your last audition, Nick Cage, way back when? What was do you remember like when it ended, when you never had to step into that audition room again?
Yeah.
It's a long time now, I'm sure.
It wasn't good. It wasn't really an audition. It was one of those uncomfortable meetings, and I don't know, it was, was it Adrian Lyne? I don't think it was Adrian Lyne.
Were you a good auditioner, like back in the day, or were you
probably
like,
not?
No.
No. See, I have a theory about auditions, and I think now they do it more often than not, which is you got to put a frame on it. You got to put your audition on tape and put a frame on it, because if you do something genuinely amazing in an audition in a room, it's going to be original and probably is going to scare them. If it's genuinely great, it's going to scare them away. So if you put a frame on it, they can look at it and go, wait a minute, what was that? And sleep on it and go back and look at it and go, wait, oh, there's something really going on here.
Right.
So that's my recommendation.
I'll wrap this up, but I'm just curious, is there any status update on the Face Off sequel? Have you seen
a
script?
No status update. I have not seen a script. Nothing.
Are you ready? Do you still have Travolta in there? Do you have the Travolta voice and mannerisms?
I don't know about that. I know that I think that the group that is seems sincere about putting this together are people that I like. I like the auspices of the filmmakers. I like their movies. I think they're a lot of fun. And I think they have a concept that is pretty complex and it could really work, but I haven't seen a script.
Well, in keeping with the Ahab kind of theme, you've been one of those white whales for me to get on the actual podcast for quite a while. And
Thank
this is
you.
A little shorter than we usually do, but I'm still going to wear you down. You're going to come on the real podcast one of these days for the full geek out career conversation.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to hold
there.
You to it. Man.
Absolutely, man. Yeah.
Congratulations on the new film. Always a pleasure, buddy.
Thanks again.
Thanks,
all right,
man.
Cheers.
Mr. Kit Harington, it's good to see you, man.
You as well.
You know what's funny? Like, I was thinking back to our past chats. Mm. We've never had a chat about, we never did a Game of Thrones chat. So I only talked to you about Testament of Youth, Xavier's film here. it's like Game of Thrones doesn't even exist. I talk about, this is what I want to say, I'm here for the real stuff, for the art. Yeah, Game of Thrones is great.
Yeah.
I'm here for the true breadth of your career.
I love that. You're a very rare interviewer who hasn't asked me about Thrones. Oh, you're more than welcome to.
But I was saying to you before, we're here at TIFF, one of my favorite places to view film, and I just saw your movie this afternoon, and I sat a couple rows behind you, and I was scared for you, because I can only imagine what that experience is for someone like you. And you were telling me that was your first time seeing Baby Ruby.
That's a rare thing that I will sit in an audience for a premiere of something I'm in, having not seen it, in a dark room by myself.
That's bravery.
On my own. I request that. Like, it's my one sort of little thing that I request, is to be able to see something privately on my own, because it's a weirdly painful experience as an actor or a creative someone on screen to do that with a whole group of people.
Yeah.
But weirdly, with this movie and today, it didn't bother me at all, and it didn't bother me going into it. I was kind of quite chill about it.
And again, I said this to you before, and as I said to you, I would have said nothing if I didn't believe it. I really dug this movie. It's called Baby Ruby, and it's a challenging piece of material, because it really is kind of a bunch of different genres that somehow are all executed very well. In a nutshell, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's basically about a young couple having a child and the anxiety and horrors and neuroses that brings up. And clearly, I'm not going to go too personal, but I know you've talked about this. This like obviously rings true to your own life, and it must have come, I would presume, after you became a parent.
Yeah, very hot on the heels of. I think Bess, this landed on my desk, and then I chatted with Bess about it, the director, about it. Probably within the first month of being a parent. So right in the world that these two in the film find themselves in, I was in when reading this movie. And then by the time we came to shoot it, my boy was 4 or 5 months old. So I was sort of coming out of that very early stage of parenthood. And it really rung true to me. And I remember saying this to Bess, because I felt that what I was told I would feel, or what society requested that I feel, didn't ring true with what I actually felt.
Right.
And now I've got that year and a half in thing of, oh, parenthood's great, I love my child, all of that stuff, that I wouldn't have to be really careful with young parents now not to do that myself.
Right.
But in the early stages, it was a huge shock to the system. I didn't know what I felt about this little creature that had landed in my house. I knew I had to look after it, but it wasn't it.
Right.
It was a definite it, and I was, you know, and I, me and my wife, and I'm sure she wouldn't mind me saying this, felt that very, very strongly, that it was the trauma of it, the shock of it, was overriding any kind of early parental feelings we might feel.
Right, and there must also be that, I'm not a parent, but I can only imagine from what I know, of like just that insecurity almost of like, wait, am I allowed to feel this way? Mm. Like, I've been told exactly. My entire life, this is gonna be the greatest experience of my life.
Yeah.
Sheer joy, and there is that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of other things too.
I'm really careful now when I meet new parents. I kind of say, how are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, you doing okay? It's crazy, isn't it? It's quite, you know, rather than, isn't it amazing? Which is what I want to say, being a parent of a slightly older child now. But I need to remember that I think any major change in your life, and there's no bigger major change than having a child, takes at least a year to reconfigure your brain and the synapses and everything. And it definitely does take that when raising a little one.
Would this film have been useful for you to see prior to becoming a dad?
Not directly prior. And I would.
I think
there should be a warning on it for anyone who's pregnant. Yes. I think if you're thinking about having a child, by all means, watch it. If you're pregnant, maybe wait till at least a year after you've given birth.
This is a fair. You're limiting your audience, but you're being very nice about it.
Another
thing I love about this, and I know we share this, is we like kind of genre mashups or just really big swings. And this one is a challenging one in that like. I think it plays, you can kind of like come at it in different ways because there's a lot of comedy there. I laughed a lot watching it. Like, what did it read to you? Like, was it presented to you as like, oh, this is a drama, this is a comedy, this is a thriller, or did they just send you the script and then you interpret it?
I like my movies like I like my music. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be able to fit it into a genre.
Right.
I want it to slip into the cracks of many different things. You know, and I... When I read something, I'm looking for that, I think. I'm looking for being a bit confused by it. Being, even if it's not perfect on the page, and that's not me saying this movie isn't, but it, like, it, even if I'm reading it and going, well, that's not great, but if it weirds me out and it's kooky and strange, and I can't work out whether it's a horror or a thriller or a comedy, or then I'm interested. And I think a lot of stuff I've done has been that. Even to the, I'm going to bring it up now, even Thrones, even though I didn't have the choice back then and it wasn't an offer and it was one of my first big jobs, I remember reading that and going, I have no idea what this is.
Right.
It's like a fantasy, but it's also a, like, a mob thing. I don't know.
And it's a swing. It's a big swing. Yeah. And that's what I always say. It's like, I don't need doubles in my life. I don't need, like, to use a baseball analogy. Yeah. I don't need, like, a kind of a safe, like, okay movie.
Yeah.
Go for it or don't go for it.
Exactly. Try. If it fails, fine. But if
I kind of admire the failures too, by the way.
Yeah. We've got to be able to fail.
Yeah.
And I thought this about Bess's script. I thought what I liked was I saw really weird comedy, dark comedy in it. And obviously it's kind of thriller, horror, genre vibes in there as well.
It also addresses kind of like this pressure to be a front-facing, perfect person, to have it all together, right? Which, like, whether you're a parent or not, I feel like it's a very relatable thing right now, and especially, you know, and there's a social media component of it all. And for anybody can relate to this, but for public figures especially, you've faced this, where it's like, I'm sure, like, you know, like, you're human. You're dealing with real shit in your personal life, and then you have to go out in public and go on a red carpet and present to the world that everything's great. And is that something that you feel like you've had to kind of reckon with since fame has come to you, to kind of figure out, like, how honest to be about, like, the inner shit that you have to deal with because you're a human being?
I feel I'm pretty, like, I'm a bit of an oversharer, but I'm pretty honest about stuff. Generally, in interviews, I think I just don't see the need to do it on a daily basis to the world on social media.
Right.
I don't see the need. I don't see what it gives me.
Yeah.
I don't see what it gives anyone else, particularly.
Really bad calories.
I do see what it takes.
Yeah.
And I, you know, having a child now, thinking about the world he's growing up in, and me and Rose have. A pretty anti-social media. I wouldn't say, you know, each their own, fine. But as for us, we're not interested in it.
You're not working on Twitter, Instagram.
None of it.
You're, like, more evolved than I am.
I think some people have to be, and I think in your job you do. But I think I've avoided it. And this movie does talk about that. And you can see her attract. By the way, Noemi Merlant in this.
Fantastic.
Fantastic.
And I just saw her in Tarot, by the way, too.
Yeah.
I mean, she's having a good run.
Yeah, she's
here.
Great.
Yeah.
She's a phenomenal actor. Her eyes being dragged back to the screen in this movie, even when she's trying to raise a child, dragged back to the screen. I think I relate to that. My phone is a huge component in my parenting now. It wants me to look at it and not my child. And that's kind of scary.
That is scary.
Or it wants me to look at it with my child.
What about in terms of looking at the phone for, it struck me in watching the movie, like, every parent must Google a strange, like, theory or ailment or question. Mm. What's the strangest thing you've Googled in your early years as a parent?
I think something about snot sucking. like when they get a cold, and no one tells you this, right? They get a cold and they've got a bunged up nose, and you've got to suck the snot out of their nose with these like little motorized things. And before they had those motorized things, you had to do it with a pipe. You had to suck the snot out of your child's nose.
Wow.
That was a weird Googling morning.
That's a revelation.
How to suck snot out of a child.
Does it have to only be for a child? Sometimes like
I tried it on myself. Yeah. I did. Yeah, of course
yeah.
you do.
Yeah.
Why, you know, any psychopath wouldn't.
Can I come clean, by the way?
Sure.
In our past conversations.
Yeah.
I had never watched Game of Thrones in any of the times we had chatted, and I always felt so much stress. I felt the weight of the world on my shoulders.
Oh, we're coming clean about stuff.
It felt like a lot. I was like, I didn't want to say the wrong word. Do I say that I haven't seen it? Do I fake it? And I tried to find a middle ground, and I guess we're okay.
You're absolutely fine with me not having watched.
No, but I have not watched it all.
Have you? Okay.
I did.
All right.
It's a good show, but congrats. It's a
really
good show.
Thank you. Yeah.
You should feel very proud.
I'm proud of it. I'm finally proud of it. Yeah, yeah.
Here's my little Game of Thrones section, and don't worry, I won't berate you. But this potential spinoff kind of shocked the world and shocked me. I mean, obviously it's a hugely rewarding experience you had, but apparently this was initiated by you. Can you say is there unfinished business for you in this character? Is that what initiated this? Like, where is your head at in terms of trying to develop this?
The only thing I'll say about that is I know nothing about it.
Oh, come on. George is talking.
Sorry, George. George
is allowed to talk. He can say anything.
George is allowed to talk, yeah.
Would it be, in theory, interesting to assume that character one more time?
I would be talking in riddles if I go any further.
Okay, fair enough. How about this, the new series? Are you watching, or does that give you like PTSD watch it?
Interestingly, I am, and I thought I would have PTSD about it, and I really didn't. And I watched it, you know, because I was intrigued, but because Miguel is my friend, and I wanted to see what he'd done with it. And I had a real kind of palpable like fear of sitting down and watching it, and I felt emotional and felt strange, and seeing people in the costumes, you know, and me not being involved, all in the lead up of the press felt odd. And then I watched it, and I was like, it's a different thing.
Yeah.
It's a different thing, it's a different show, it's different people. And I just felt overwhelming, like, support for them. And real, really proud of what they'd done. You know, not that I should be proud because it's nothing to do with me, but like, I was proud for them. I think that they've done a really good show, and it's its own thing, and it's really hard to follow up a big show like that. And I think that they've nailed it and made it their own, and that's great.
I'm just saying, if this rumored spinoff ever happens, I know you're a big Friends fan. I just hope it's better than the Joey spinoff. That's all I'm
saying.
Was
there a Joey spinoff?
You don't remember the Joey spinoff?
No, I don't.
You've blocked it out. Yes, there was.
Oh, I must have blocked that out.
Yeah. So don't go the Joey route.
No.
You can do better. It wasn't Matt's fault.
Yeah.
Where are we at on the Marvel front? Is there any, like, do you know more than when Eternals came out? Has the game plan changed? Do you know? I know you're not going to tell me what, but do you know the plan?
I don't know much of what they're planning, and you know, I hope to be involved in future stuff with that character, with Dane Whitman, and that he might go on and be the thing that everyone quotes at me in the street, but I honestly don't know. I don't know what their plans are. I know they're going into a kind of phase 5, and
you don't know if you're going to spend more time with Mahershala or Harry Styles.
I don't know. I know that, you know, obviously Mahershala's voice came in at the end of Eternals, but you just don't know where they'll take it. And really, and I mean this genuinely, and people never believe you when you say this, but they don't tell us much, really. And I think for good reason, because we'll be in an interview like this and we'll go and spill the beans.
I'll wear you down after a day of press.
Yeah.
Fine, Josh.
Yeah, fine.
I'm in Blade, okay? Is that what you wanted?
Yeah,
can I leave now?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you're telling me the truth. I'm holding you to
absolutely
this.
Pinky promise,
okay.
I swear.
Okay. Just looking forward, generally speaking, what's on the agenda? I know you just did some theater back home.
Yeah.
I'd love to see you do some theater in New York. I was just asking about New York.
I'd love to go and do something in New York. The play I did isn't going to New York. It was a kind of one-off thing in London, and it was a dream for me playing Henry V, and I just loved that experience. I'm now looking for whatever the next play is. I don't like to spend more than 2 or 3 years away from being on stage if I can help it. I don't know whether it will be in London or New York. Who knows? It gets harder and harder as your child grows up to spend lengthy periods of time away in another city. But you know, the right thing at the right time, maybe.
Are you the type of actor that kind of makes the list of the current actors and filmmakers you're into and chase that, or is it more sensible just to like take what comes in, negotiate, see what's there?
I am more of the latter.
Yeah.
But I'd like to be more of the former. And I think I respect a lot of you. Have your card run out? Yeah, go for it.
Sorry, and I'm almost done. Sorry, guys.
All good. No, all good.
So you're not going to jump to D23 tomorrow and make a big announcement about
it? Not unless they call me in the next
you're
5 hours.
Not jumping
hours.
On a private plane right after this?
No.
That was my fear. I'm going to ask
that,
him.
But that shit can happen with Marvel.
No, I know.
They could be like, right, you're going there now. And you're like, okay. I don't know. Like, I live by the ethos of, like, who fucking knows?
Yeah.
When they call me, they call me.
It's a weird
C'est la vie.
That's probably the most sensible, because, like, otherwise you're going to drive yourself crazy.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You really could.
Yeah.
There is a bit of a waiting game nature of it.
Yeah.
There is.
You've got a lot of people to... You good?
Yeah, all good.
Excellent. All right.
What was I saying?
So, I know...
We're back on, guys. Sorry.
We're talking about like being fans of people's work and kind of like chasing the material, developing material versus letting it come to you. Like, where are you at right now? Like, are you actively looking for a certain type of experience, certain type of film or TV or what?
I think I'm turning into that person.
Yeah.
I think I've lived for a while and just seeing what comes through the door. And my friend has a saying of the cavalry isn't coming. You know, I've always lived like, oh, something's gonna, you know, and I think actually the wise actor and the wise creative keeps their eyes on what's going on and looks for the right filmmaker to work with next. And that is what I'm starting to do. It's hard when you've got a toddler.
Yeah, I don't sympathize. I understand.
You get to the
though.
Evening and you're like, I don't want to. Because the other thing
and
is.
And turn on a mindless show.
It's a little bit like being a chef, right? Chefs don't go home and cook themselves an amazing meal. Like, as an actor, like, I find it quite hard to sit down and watch something of an evening because it's your free time and it feels like work. You have to dedicate time to do it. And that's what I'm doing as a working practice.
Just be careful, because soon enough the child will be old enough to start dominating your choices, and then you're watching a lot of Pixar is great, but that's going to be your life for the next 7 years.
Yeah, maybe.
I appreciate the time, man. Toronto's always a madhouse, and squeezing me into a busy schedule means a lot. The movie, I hope, gets exposed to a big audience very soon, because it's a really challenging, but I was going to say fun. It is kind of a fun piece of work.
It is kind of fun. Yeah. It is funny and fun, and I think that you could look at this and read its description and go, ooh, that's going to be bleak. But you might miss something by doing that. Like, there's some real humor in it.
Big swings always.
Yeah.
Go after the big ones.
Yeah.
You always do, man. Thanks for catching up today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That was a great interview. Thank you very much.
Anna, we're doing it. We're back.
It's happening. Get ready.
Well, not ready. It's happening now.
Okay, great. Well, then I am ready.
You've just escaped an elevator, as I understand. This is breaking news. We're in Toronto.
Breaking news. Toronto, like, secretly doesn't want me here, I feel. No, we all, like, packed into... And it was genuinely one of those moments where we're like, can we all fit? Yeah, why not? And then the elevator actually got stuck. And at first I was like, we're not stuck, guys. That's too crazy. That wouldn't happen. And I'm just waiting for a very unremarkable thing where the, you know, firefighters come and they...
Sure.
Because we were waiting there for a while for the firefighters. And, like, I thought they would just open the door. No, we were between floors. Like a movie.
You were
Look
built
at
for
me.
This kind of situation.
I'm in Die Hard, baby. It's happening. Meanwhile, I did nothing. I'm like, I'm an action hero. The firefighters are like, you hung limp like a baby and we saved you, you idiot. I truly was, as I'm like climbing up going like, I had a very short skirt option today. And I said, no, I just feel like I want to wear the long skirt.
You were a changed person. I knew the Anna before, and now Anna post-traumatic incident.
Right? I'm suddenly full of gratitude all the time. This will last an hour, and then I will immediately go back to being bitter about everything.
Oh, no, I want the bitter Anna back.
Okay, great.
Okay, let's just skip the gratitude part.
I hate everything.
Yes. it is legitimately good to see you out in the wild in person, like human beings. Congratulations on the new film.
Thank you.
So Alice Darling, we're going to talk about. This is, it's like kind of like Girls Trip without the laughs a little bit.
Yeah,
you can have that
like
for free.
Very grim, sad, handheld girl strip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was put off by the blooper reel at the end. That was surprising to me.
I hate when you have great bloopers on a really sad movie, because guess what? You still have fun
of course.
A really sad movie, and you like build friendships and like have fun moments, and then you're like, no one's ever going to see these. Not even on a, if DVDs were still R.I.P. Maybe they're coming back, considering all the HBO Max stuff. Maybe DVDs are coming back.
Yeah.
But even so, like, there's no blooper reel on this, but funny stuff happened. We're allowed.
You were allowed. You and probably needed on
yes,
something like this.
Yes,
very
that.
Okay, so talk to me a little bit about this. This is, it's an excellent performance, an excellent film that really is a much more realistic look at something I've seen in film over the years, toxic relationships.
Yeah.
And we've seen kind of like, you know, like the Sleeping with the Enemy kind of like genre version of this.
Yeah. I know. I was just talking about Sleeping with the Enemy this morning.
Which, no shade to Sleeping with the Enemy.
Not at
by
all.
The way.
Great film. Tense.
Get those towels lined up perfectly. Remember mm-hmm. that. But talk to me a little bit about what resonated with you about this when this one comes along.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that you're talking about is exactly the thing that resonated for me that, you know, the screenwriter, Alana, was bringing a lot of her own experience into it. And she, like, wrote this script that on the page you could feel the tension and the poetry of it, like the kind of like anxious, oppressive atmosphere of the movie. And there was never a sense of like, oh, but what's gonna happen next? It was like very clear from the first page that this was a kind of psychological portrait. And that also meant that like the people who are going to be drawn to this movie are going to be coming into it because of that.
Right.
So everybody was like bringing their A game because everybody was coming into it really passionately, whether they'd had a personal experience with a relationship like this or very close to somebody who did. And I think everybody's either it's happened to them or they're close to somebody that it's happened to. And so, you know, it's something that sort of touches so many people. And it meant that everybody was bringing like real heart and real specificity to the movie. And it was like this atmosphere of like half group therapy and half filmmaking. And I think we all felt like, well, we could sort of do some cheats here and take some shortcuts and make sure that, I don't know, like that we've got like a movie. And it just felt like, but then why are we here?
Yeah,
why are we
doing
this?
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about, because I know you've talked about how, you know, this also, as you said, you related to this as many people will on a personal level. Like, did you find that in retrospect that was helpful for you? Do you feel like, oh, are you, I'm fixed now. This movie fixed me. I'm good.
Oh, God. Wouldn't that be great if art fixed us?
Yeah.
If art fixed people, man, artists would be less crazy.
Right.
It's interesting that draw to, like, work through your stuff in art and know, like, it's not going to fix your problems. It is not a route to healing, but there's still that, like, you're compelled to do it anyway. And I do think that there's like value in knowing that like, oh, this is sort of the movie I wish I had seen, you know, that kind of thing. Like, that was what I talked to Mary, the director, about a lot, was like, I think, you know, there are lots of portrayals of abusive relationships where people would go, well, that's not happening, so I guess I'm fine.
Right, that's not a full checklist. Yeah.
And like that, to be in this very confusing state for 90 minutes has value, because, you know, when like one of the first people that saw it told me that he was like, yeah, for like half the movie, I wasn't sure if Alice was making it all up.
Right.
And I was like, that's that's kind of the thing that I couldn't put it into those words, but it was like, right, that's what you're going for because that's the experience.
Right. Well, it's a very subjective experience for an audience member. You're kind of like in her shoes, in her head, and you're kind of like, yeah, wait, am I going crazy? Like, is this psychological black swans territory where I'm like losing my mind? And
completely.
I guess what you're saying is, sadly, that's really the experience for many people.
Yeah, and to be subjective means that you're questioning, like, yeah, I'm watching the movie, I feel like I'm going crazy, and how much can I trust Alice? And, of course, Alice is not sure.
Yeah.
So that was a really juicy place to be, and like a place that we all wanted to be mining.
Are the rewards of this, is it different for you to do something like this? Because it's been a minute, I feel like, since you've done something, you know, not that the other stuff
is... Oh, I did this for the paycheck.
Yeah, exactly.
The fat paycheck that I got for this.
Infinity War, Endgame, watch out. Alice Darling is coming for you. But no, I mean, that is the goal, right? Is to create some meaningful art for yourself and the audience. Does this check a box just like creatively that hadn't been fulfilled in a minute or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, well, I mean, I do think that I did go into it feeling like I had been working so much before COVID that I was getting very good at acting for Video Village. Right. And, like, knowing what they wanted mm-hmm. and giving it to them because I'm a very professional young lady. And that was, like, the thing that I was fulfilling on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And to do something that is more restrained is really terrifying.
Right.
I think to be very still and know that the dailies are going back to, you know, whoever's watching the dailies and that they might be like, huh, today didn't make me go, the dailies look great.
Right.
And trust that, like, it will be a whole performance
yep.
is really scary and uncomfortable for me because you and I have a similar thing where yeah. it's like, I know how to perform. I know how to make everybody happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what they want. And I'll give it to them. And to trust that, like, I know what you want today. But what you're going to want in a year is something a little different
yeah.
And something a little more whole. And again, like the whole exercise for me now is about self-trust. So to trust that was actually really valuable.
So the movie's called Alice Darling. Has there been a quote unquote kind of like a pet name that a friend or lover or whatever has given you that you've hated, like a condescending kind of in retrospect, like, oh, I can't believe I let myself be called this?
Oh, there's something... Not like a boyfriend, but when girls that I don't know that well call me sweetie, oh, what's happening? What's going on here? I don't know why. I'm sure that other people don't have a problem with that,
right.
But there's just like, there's something about sweetie,
I feel
where
like
I'm like, you have to know me for at least 7 months before you get sweetie.
I feel like in your presence over the years, I feel like I've heard a lot of like, oh, honey, kind of a thing. Like, I don't know.
In my presence?
You saying that to me or others. And I don't, and I
well,
feel like that's a...
that's because I enjoy teasing you.
Yeah, that's probably it. Okay, so speaking of...
Oh, sweetie!
exactly. I've looked back at our thousands of conversations over the years. It's kind of an interesting time capsule of pop culture to look at like all the like, this or that, Iggy Azalea or Kim Kardashian. It's like,
oh,
it's always
right.
like, it's always like, we're always talking about what's in the moment. So... in that spirit, because you are my barometer for what's happening in pop culture, always. You keep me young, Anna. Are you watching Lord of the Rings or House of the Dragon?
I have not watched either, which is bananas,
what
right?
happened to you?
I know.
I'm about to direct,
so I'm in movie land. I'm watching like lots of 1970s movies to get inspired. But because I am like, when was the last time I binged a show? What is going on with me? But I'm trying to like, you know, be a professional and do my research. It's really annoying.
The Dating Game is the film.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited for you. Okay, this is pretty soon. You're shooting,
mm-hmm.
right? So what's going to be the vibe? What's the vibe of the movie? What's the vibe of Anna on set going to be? Or are you going to be?
A taskmaster. Yeah. Every horror story you've ever heard, right. I'm going to top all of them. That's my goal.
The good news is that young female directors are given a fair shot, and they always get good press.
And they can misbehave as much as they want.
Yeah, it's an even playing field. So you're fine.
Absolutely. I'll be fine. I'll be fine. It won't overtake the movie at all. No, the vibe is, it's, you know, look, it's a scary movie. It's based on a really enraging, harrowing true story.
Yeah.
But it's also, again, it's a script that I really responded to because there's moments of real poetry in it. And it's this really shocking framework of like a serial killer who went on the dating game, but it's almost like an inroad to talk about intimacy and shame and really kind of get into some of the juice of the way that you put yourself at risk and the way that, you know, and the way that this man operated and kind of managed to slip through the cracks in the system and took advantage of that for many, many years.
Have you thought about, like, I mean, what does it fill you with when you think about, like, those first couple days that are going to be on set? Because I would imagine you've been thinking about this for a few years.
Oh, full blackout. There's no way I'm going to remember the first 3 days. Just all adrenaline.
But, I mean, you're a high-energy person anyway. I could imagine that those first few days it's going to be just manic in the best possible way.
I know. I actually, I feel like I have to remember to, like, I can get very, again, I think we're sort of cut from the same cloth in this way. Like, I can get very just, like, prefrontal cortex where it's just like, okay, I just need to focus on this thing and I can figure this out.
Yeah.
And that to, like, breathe into myself and, like, get my body involved would probably be a good idea. To be able to, like, actually be present for the experience will be something I'll be trying to do because I know it will be tempting to just go into, like, hyper-focused adrenaline brain.
I'm very excited for you. Talk to me. So there's been no escape lately. You haven't been watching Top Gun Maverick like on a daily basis just to like decompress.
Oh, I know. What
have you not seen that film?
No, I haven't seen it. I know.
You should be a pilot. You don't take up much space. They can devote more weaponry.
Is that a thing with pilots? Is it like jockeys?
Yeah, I think. Well, that's a good question. Well, I'm not going to say anything about Tom's size, but I mean, we know he's not 7 feet tall.
Yeah. So yeah, I think I'd be a great pilot.
Just saying.
That's really the main requirement for pilots is to not take up too much space.
Yeah. So
everybody knows that.
You're in.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, you have never done, as much as we've talked about over the years, like, your love of fantasy and genre and stuff, just as a consumer, you've never been in armor on a horse, and I'm ready for it.
Yeah, what the hell? That's true.
Hey!
Hey, world! What's going on? I know.
Do you not chase it? Do they not think of you? What's happening?
It's possible that I'm just thought of as too loud and shrill to be on a horse in shining armor. That might be the issue.
Well, there were loud and shrill people in medieval times.
Like, just giving speeches like, today we ride! Okay? For honor, for valor!
Follow me! Now!
I don't know why my phone isn't ringing.
Yeah, weird. I'm trying to do you a favor. Just expand the options. A simple favor?
Yeah.
So this is, I was going to say an unlikely franchise, but maybe not. I mean, there was always hope from the beginning.
I think that, like, the idea always appealed to Paul, and I was like, well, of course it would be heaven to do more of these, but in what way?
Right.
How would we do that? I obviously can't say anything, but, like, it's so clever. It's so good. I'm so excited.
Are there adjectives you can assign to this? Is it more?
No.
Okay.
I'm trying not to get in trouble, guy.
You and Blake, you and Paul, the triumvirate is back. Mm-hmm. Does Ryan get in? Does Ryan Reynolds get a cameo?
I imagine that's up to Blake. You know, she wears the pants in the film and all the time, I imagine.
But you like the script. You're excited by the
I'm very, very excited about the script.
It's all happening, Anna. We're back. As long as you can keep escaping elevators.
Can you believe that?
No, I'm really frankly amazed you survived.
Like, really, when we got stuck in between floors and like, cause I was waiting for the door to open and when I heard them on the top of the elevator, I was like, my life is a movie.
What a way to go though. What a great story. In retrospect, in the years to come, I could have said, my buddy Anna Kendrick died in an elevator mishap.
Well, I'm glad I didn't die, Josh.
Me too. I'm just saying, if you're going to go, make it a good story.
But immediately, as soon as, like, any of this happens, like, from the microsecond of, like, wait, are you serious? We're stuck in the elevator? Immediately, I'm like, well, this is a story. Like, this is how my brain works.
This is good. Talk show story. Yeah, you're like, Fallon, got it.
I'm like, today's going to be a lot easier.
Yeah, one less thing. It's good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.